Welcome to God and Country, a program where we look at current events through the lens of Scripture. I've been thinking about the results of the recent election, and this afternoon I would like to examine the events of the last week through what the Bible teaches about taxes, government, and human nature. In 930 BC, an election similar to ours took place. Solomon died, and it was time for his son Rehoboam to take the throne. The 12 tribes of Israel had to decide whether they would follow this new king. So 10 of the tribes sent a delegation to Rehoboam to ask about his future economic policies. I'm reading from 1 Kings chapter 12. All the assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke hard. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." Rehoboam's father, King Solomon, put a heavy economic burden upon the people. He was somewhat of a big government tax and spend politician. In 1 Kings chapter 10, we read that the weight of gold which came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. Beside that, from the traders and the wares of the merchants and all the kings of the Arabs and the governors of the country. These people were not surrendering their gold to Solomon out of the goodness of their heart. Solomon had his government strongmen collecting money everywhere it could be found. Solomon drafted people to work for the government. 1 Kings 5:13. Now King Solomon levied forced laborers from all of Israel, and the forced laborers numbered 30,000 men. He sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in relays. They were in Lebanon a month and 2 months at home, and Adoram was over the forced laborers. Now Solomon had 70,000 transporters and 80,000 hewers of stone in the mountains, besides Solomon's 3,300 chief deputies who were over the project, who ruled over the people who were doing the work. This forced labor was the essence of taxation. You and I are working for the government from January to April. This year, Tax Freedom Day was April 9th. Americans had to work from January 1st to April 9th to earn enough money to pay all the federal and state government obligations. The Tax Foundation calculates the tax freedom date, and it gets later and later every year. That was Solomon's taxes. As far as his spending, we read in 1 Kings 10:18, "Moreover, Solomon made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with refined gold. 12 lions were standing there on the 6 steps on the one side and on the other. Nothing like it was made for any other kingdom. All of King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. None was of silver. It was not considered valuable in the days of Solomon. For the king had at sea the ships of Tarshish with the ships of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the ships of Tarshish came bringing gold and silver, ivory, apes, peacocks. So King Solomon became greater than all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom." 1 Kings 10:24, "Now Solomon gathered chariots and horsemen. He had 1,400 chariots and 1,200 horsemen, and he stationed them in the chariot cities and with the king in Jerusalem. The king made silver as common as stones in Jerusalem, and he made cedars as plentiful as sycamore trees that are in the lowland." All of this nation building by Solomon looked good at the beginning. It created a sense of national pride, prosperity. It forced people to work for the society. But was it God's perfect will? No. There are two passages every political active Christian should know by heart, Deuteronomy 17 and 1 Samuel chapter 8. In Deuteronomy 17, the law of Moses commands the king not to amass wealth. Moreover, he shall not multiply horses for himself. He shall not multiply wives for himself, or else his heart will turn away, nor shall he greatly increase silver and gold for himself. But Solomon violated the law of God. In 1 Samuel 8, Samuel tells the people what will happen to them because they wanted a king and a large government to take care of them. Samuel said, "This will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take of your sons and place them for himself in his chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. He will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of 50, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters for perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your field and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give them to his officers and to his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. This is what happens to a people who forsake the Lord and look to a government of men to solve their problems. Now, all of this taxation and spending of Solomon was tolerable at the beginning. Solomon had all the wealth and goodwill built up by his father David. And Solomon's expensive building projects were appreciated by most of the people because they advanced the status of the nation. It appeared to foster trade and business in the short term. And I'm sure it increased the standard of living for the people, but at the expense of others. But toward the end of Solomon's 40-year reign, the chickens came home to roost, just like it's taken about a generation for American socialism to finally collapse the American economy. In 1 Kings 11, we read that Israel began to have political, economic, and national defense problems. Rehoboam is ready to take the throne, and he's too naive to understand that times have changed. He thought his reign could be as prosperous as his father's. He thought pursuing the same tax and spend policy of his father would stimulate the economy and produce the same results as in his father's early days. But as the expression goes, they had milked the cow dry, and the goose that laid the golden eggs could not be squeezed anymore. So the people come to Rehoboam and ask him about his future policy. We read in 1 Kings 12, King Rehoboam consulted with the elders who had served his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, "How do you counsel me to answer this people?" Then they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to this people today and will serve them and grant them their petition and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever." But Rehoboam forsook the counsel of the elders, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men who grew up with him and served him. So he said to them, "What counsel do you give that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" The young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you shall say to this people who spoke to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, now you make it lighter for us.' But you shall speak to them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions.'" Notice that there was a difference in the experience and wisdom of the counselors. Do you see a parallel in our day? The old timers are essentially saying you need to cut taxes, cut the size of government, cut wasteful spending, listen to the people. Rehoboam's friends, his constituency of big government socialists, tell him to increase the size of government and increase the taxes, increase spending, don't listen to the people. They do not know what's good for them. Doesn't this sound like our current administration's failure? Most Americans were against nationalizing health care. It didn't matter to this administration. They did it anyway. The people were against the stimulus spending. The government did it anyway. In the last 2 years under the Obama administration, while the private sector was suffering job loss, the government hired a whopping 500,000 new workers. Now, one might say all of these government increases are for the benefit of the people. But I'm sure that's exactly what Rehoboam's buddies were also saying. You're giving the people jobs working for the Israeli government as builders, as soldiers, as tax collectors, as social workers. You'll help the economy. But here's the problem with the philosophy of Rehoboam and his friends. For every dollar the government spends, it is one less dollar the private sector can spend. So government spending does not increase economic activity. And you, the public, will most likely spend your money more efficiently than the government, so that private spending produces more real wealth than government. For every government job, it costs two jobs in the private sector. And most of the increase in government jobs are for jobs that are really not socially necessary. The government is not efficient in providing services because it's not under the discipline of the free market. If people want something or need something, they will work for it in the cheapest way possible. But government jobs exist because a bureaucrat thinks you need the service. And the price for that service is forced upon the public in the form of taxation. Government jobs don't produce real wealth.